Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Our goals are to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long range terms of what's going on in our society and how we are affected by the ramifications of change or in some cases lack of change. We have a fascinating topic today, a topic that fits into both the issues of employment, education, and technology on the Central Coast and how all of those fit together. The job market in San Luis Obispo County, as we know, is challenging. We have an underemployed workforce, and the county ranks number 6 in the most unaffordable places in the U.S. to live. That's not news anybody probably wants to hear or think about, and all of us probably know about it, but it's a reality we want to talk about. Tech jobs locally, which often come with better wages than a lot of other jobs, have increased about 20% in the last 5 years. Due to a large part of the increase in startups and expanding technology companies in the county, and also the fact that we have larger firms moving in and working with firms that have been here before. Example is that Amazon has a presence locally now. If you don't know Amazon has a presence locally now, that's probably a discussion for some other time. Trust me, they're here. Local tech firms have found it very challenging to really find highly skilled workers that want to move into the county because the housing cost here scares some people away. And the ability to really train and work with folks to expand the job market in technology has become a challenge for a lot of organizations. So in 2014, San Luis Obispo County's Office of Education formed something called SLO Partners to basically address career readiness and college challenges for the county's population. SLO Partners' mission is to engage in business partnerships and education to align workforces with both career and college paths. And they've really been providing an opportunity to find ways to sync up a lot of things that may not have been synced before. And some of that involves apprenticeship programs and training that we really put in the category of being outside of the classic environment of what we think of as a college or technical education. So we're going to talk today about Ticket into Tech, which is a project of SLO Partners, which is part of, as I said before, the County Office of Education. Today I have Ashley Smith. She's an apprentice with this program. Dean Mitchell, who is a senior developer at Stream Guys, a local tech firm and a company that's working with the tech program that we're talking about today as a way to channel efforts. And Michael Speckerla, and I've actually got your name right, I think, Michael, the first time, but as I tell people, I'll probably get it wrong at least 3 or 4 times, so I apologize on the front end now. Michael's the executive director of SLO Partners. We really want to talk about, and we'll talk about, not only what this program is doing, but what the opportunities may be for some of our listeners to really become part of this program, because there are some fascinating educational and scholarship programs available through that. Michael, probably need to start with you and explain to us what in the world SLO Partners is, how it came about, and what your program is now.
So I'm the Director of Career and College Pathways at the County Office of Education and also the Executive Director of SLO Partners. And the reason why we created SLO Partners was really to get a number of different organizations out of their silos to be able to work together. Whether it's the Workforce Development Board, Community College, Cal Poly University, business partners, the various school districts. We really want to make sure that the education that we're providing for young people coming out of high school and wanting to go and further their education really aligns with what the local economic opportunities are. So that's what we're about.
Is one of the first questions as I was looking at all the material we got, and we got a tremendous amount of material about your program and the reasons for it, was where does this, this is not part of Cuesta College. This is not part of a high school program. It's not part of a university program. So what is the format of how you work with students because I'm just wondering where your classroom is or your virtual classroom is.
So with the apprenticeship program, we were awarded a competitive grant through the California Apprenticeship Initiative, and that's actually was funded through the Community College Foundation. And they were specifically looking for new and innovative apprenticeship programs in technology. So part of what the County Office of Education is doing by pursuing those types of grants is to really pilot and spearhead innovation in terms of training and education and curriculum.
That's a great challenge. And a lot of the funding came from the Community College Foundation. Is there other funding with local firms coming to you to work to keep this program alive?
Yeah. So what's important about the apprenticeship model is that the foundation grant money was able to get us the seed money to start the program to initially train, recruit, and market the program. But then once we find the business partner who's willing to hire the apprentice, that business partner is paying for the wages of that employee. So that's where it's a nice match in meeting. It's really showing the validity and the credibility that the training is something that the business values.
So most of the training is really in an on-the-job environment. There's a part of it you have to qualify for, but the actual day-to-day education is between people like Ashley and Dean working together.
Yeah, with technology, the rapid changes that really is going through, you really need that on-the-job component to really stay up to date. But apprenticeship always has a classroom component as well as an experiential on-the-job component, because really content is important, but the context of that content is even more important, and especially in technology where you've got really such a rapid pace of development that you've got to be in there on the scene and having that mentoring relationship and that experience with the company who's always out there problem solving and developing and adapting to what the business and the consumer needs are.
People pay attention to you when you talk about this. I'm not being sarcastic. I mean, your ability to basically make this very clear, because I think for a lot of us who are not in technology, understanding how you can fit that together in a less than typical formal education is hard to figure out. A lot of us have kids, and we've grown up with kids that have become gamers and work with technology a lot, but how they get that information to then work with is unclear for some of us who, I'm the oldest person in the room, which is not a surprise, some of us who are older to understand how it all fits together. Dean, tell us how. Okay, we probably need an explanation of what stream guys are. By the way, that's not two words. But on your information, that's not two words. It's one word, stream guys.
That's correct.
Okay.
One word.
So who are the stream guys and how did you get involved with this?
Well, stream guys is a content delivery network, and we've been around. So what that means is we do a lot of like audio and video delivery online. So we started off bringing terrestrial radio stations online, and we've been around for about 18 years, since 2000. We do the majority of NPR stations, including this one. We bring it online and stream live live streams and make podcasts and available for on-demand.
Okay. I appreciate that clarification, because I was wondering whether or not it's a secret that basically if our listeners are listening to KCBX streaming on the internet,
yes,
or through one of their Google or Apple speakers at home, which they can do, that's come through you guys.
That's correct, more than likely. KCBX is one of our clients, and so generally the live stream will come from Stream Guys, but it can be ingested through a variety of platforms. So you might be able to listen to it through TuneIn, and that could be broadcast through their servers. But your origin online, your entry point online, does come through us.
Okay, we clarified that, which is something I never knew. I mean, I've been doing radio here for quite some time. I did not know how that particular component came about. I just figured it was something NPR did for us, and now I'll be in trouble for saying that. But anyway, that's good for that clarification. How did you get involved in the Slow Partners program?
Well, it's actually pretty interesting, and kind of as Michael and I were talking earlier, out of the blue, we opened an office down here in San Luis Obispo about a little over a year ago, and we were kind of interested in the tech scene down here. We went to the Slow Hot House, which Dan Weeks is a part of, and he kind of introduced us to a lot of aspects of the tech culture down here, and this happened to be one of them. So our COO gave him a call one day because we were looking for people to bring on board, and from there, it just organically grew. We just gave a call, started a relationship, and since then have been bringing people on onto the company for the office here. Okay.
You brought up an interesting twist to this that I can't let go away.
Sure.
I'm sorry. So yeah. You're a national company. This is not your home office locally. What is the benefit of you having a presence in San Luis County? Because my hunch would be what you do for KCBX and other NPR stations, you can pretty much do from anywhere.
That is correct. In fact, we're a global company. A lot of our clients are outside the United States. So we originate from Arcata, California, which is about a little over 500 miles north from here.
An equally small town.
An equally small town, yeah, exactly. So this is kind of right up our alley, you know, San Luis Obispo, kind of like not the San Francisco or San Jose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was coming down to San Luis Obispo kind of opened up a lot of avenues for us since I'm not sure how much everyone knows about the Arcata area, but it can be kind of isolated. And so there was the opportunity to come down here where there's a large tech scene and a lot of people that are supporting that community, the tech community, and for us to start to get involved with that and expand our relationships and expand the people who we bring on and people we hire.
Yeah, and we've had people on the program before talking about the San Luis Hot House, people both related to Cal Poly and Cuesta College and Slow Partners before, about how these pieces fit together, because it's one of the things I think that becomes, as an outside observer to this, that important for this community is most of what you're talking about doing doesn't need to be in a large city to do it. We have companies like MindBody. We have Amazon that has a presence here. It doesn't matter where they do what they're doing, so the community they're in can be a good fit based upon personal preferences as opposed to having to be in the middle of Silicon Valley.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, you do see a lot of that down here, which we were, you know, surprised me at least when I first moved down here that MindBody was here, you know, a multi-million dollar company. You know, there's a lot of little, you know, Amazon, of course, as you stated, but there's also a lot of little companies down here that are starting up that, you know, surprised me that it would be here. Virtual reality companies, companies that you don't hear much about that do operations management, you know, that kind of stuff. And you just find more and more of these companies that are thriving here just because they like the area as a personal preference. And then as you're starting to see more and more, at least over the year that we've been here, because of the community support that's offered to them.
Okay. So how does this program give you the ability to have an apprentice, if you will, in your facility or multiple apprentices in your facility to be part of this program? By the way, Ashley, this is all a setup, so you can't give me monosyllabic answers about what's going on when we get to you. So, okay.
All right. Anyway. So it was great, and I'm going to reiterate something that Dan Weeks has said multiple times, and that just stuck with me the first time I heard it, is that he hires for attitude and trains for aptitude.
Screen for attitude, train for
aptitude.
There
we go. Yeah. And that's an amazing, amazing statement once you think about it, because, you know, and I'm sure as many employers are aware, many people working on teams, it's the most difficult thing about bringing on a new team member is if that person has the attitude to stay with the team, to stay with them for a long period of time after they've been trained, you know, because some of the most difficult parts of that is, you know, bringing on a new team member is that if you bring them on and you spend the time to invest and train and then decide to leave or it's not for them or it's, you know, any variety of reasons, that's a big loss.
Okay. So how long have you been part of this program?
Let's see. I think a little under 8 months. I mean,
Our first cohort.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we're right there at the beginning. Yeah. Okay.
How many apprentices do you have working there?
We have one directly, Ashley, and then we've had two other people that were part of the program that work with us currently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those were the graduates from our pre-apprenticeship.
Right. I think so. That's what, yes.
Okay. Ashley, you can't sit there silently all day. So tell me, how did you get involved in this and how does it fit your goals?
I actually kind of had a pre-midlife crisis where I dropped out of grad school. I was in Boston and I returned back to California to be with my husband where he was in grad school, also having a midlife crisis. And we kind of just changed careers and plans and moved here in a moment where we were like, oh, what are we going to do with our lives? Because we love the area. I went to school at UCSB. And we visited friends up here, and we were just absolutely charmed, and we decided to live here. But there are particular challenges of living here that I think you mentioned before, and trying to figure out what I was going to do, I decided tech was probably the right answer. I had a little background in tech. I was in the Navy as an information systems technician. And I one day out of the blue was Googling programs similar to this one, hoping that there was something in the area, and I found Ticket in the Tech.
Okay, so you found it. Mm-hmm. What did it take to get involved in it?
We had to take a test, and there was an interview.
Oh, I hate that part.
But it wasn't. It wasn't a huge obstacle to get involved, and it was very supportive, the whole thing. Yeah, I don't want to say it was, like, a huge obstacle.
Don't sell yourself short, Ashley. There were over 900 applicants in our first cohort. We interviewed about 250 to 300 by phone.
That's okay.
And then we live interviewed 100. So Ashley stood out amongst others. And that's what we mean by screen for attitude, train for aptitude.
So how many people were how many people made it to an apprenticeship position from that first screening?
So we selected 50 people to enroll in the first part of the program, a pre-apprenticeship program. And that was an eight-week boot camp to get certified in CompTIA A-plus certification, which is sort of a baseline certification for most IT pathways in which you know troubleshooting and customer service for computer specialists. And then we selected 30 of the 50 to be moved on to apprenticeship.
And the apprenticeship program lasts how long?
So the apprenticeship program then was another 6 weeks of intensive training, either in IT or in software testing, and then 1 year of on-the-job training. So they got additional certifications after the A-plus certification.
I want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in now, of course, this is Central Coast Voices on KCBX. We are talking about Ticket into Tech, which is a program that the SLO partners, which is a program of the County Office of Education, is working with to basically put people in the tech fields into an apprenticeship program with Indeed companies that are already doing that. We have a representative today from StreamGuys, that's Dean, and he actually is an employer, and Ashley, who's one of our apprentices, and Michael, who's the executive director of SLO Partners. And we probably all have a family member someplace that we wish would get involved in a program like this. And maybe in some cases that isn't possible because their attitude going into this is not what you need. But it's also not inexpensive. This is a program that costs about $17,000, I understand. But you have some scholarships, and we'll talk about that a little later. Do you find that most of your applicants are challenged by the cost? Or you have enough applicants who are not challenged by the cost that doesn't become a big factor?
So it's with the apprenticeship that Ashley is involved in, the first cohort, the IT and the software testing, those are grant funded, and those aren't the same cost as what the $17,000 mark is really for the software developer boot camp, which we just initiated this summer. So we've got varying levels of what the apprenticeship is, from the entry level, which is what we launched last year in terms of IT and software testing. And now we're coupling that with the software developer. So we have the beginning of the pipeline in terms of software, the software testing, mm-hmm. and then the software developer. And Ashley is involved in that program as well this mm-hmm. summer.
Okay. A phrase shows up in the materials I got from you guys that I need some clarification on. It's the SLO Full Stack Academy Software Engineering Immersion Program.
So this summer, we partnered with Full Stack Academy. They run a really successful coding boot camp in Chicago and New York, and they're one of they have some of the best outcomes among all the coding boot camps in the United States. And they are now in Chicago, New York, and San Luis Obispo. And so the boot camp prep program is a course that's free to see if you're eligible to make it through that kind of a program, whether to prepare you for the test to see if you're eligible for the full stack boot camp.
Well, you clarified. I added a question in my own notes because I was trying to figure out what full stack means. So does full stack have a meaning other than it happens to be the name of the company?
A full stack developer is someone who knows both back end and front end development. Did I get that right?
You nailed it. That was perfect.
You're the professional.
Yeah. Yes. It's like, you know, something I felt like, gee, I don't want to go Google it and play with it. I really want to just get a definition from you guys when you're here. So I appreciate that. So pretty much if you're competent in dealing with the full stack, you can handle any sides of the software development.
Yeah. Generally, it is in reference, almost always in reference to web development. And, usually there's two sides to that. You'll do the front end, which you look at when you go to a web page, you know, the styling, the graphics, the kind of layout of that. And then the back end, which is kind of the engine that drives all the data that the front end gets. And previously, there was a pretty hard separation between the two. You did back end, you did a lot of coding, you weren't too worried about styling or looks. Or you did the front end and you were more a designer. But now lately the two have become kind of integrated and connected, and so now a lot of people are full stack, where they can do the entire, I'm just going to say an entire stack of technology that relates from all the way on the back end that's driving it, all the way up to the front end to what people interact with.
Just the thought scares me. I sometimes have trouble with my cell phone. So, anyway. Well, one of the questions that we asked when we put out our questionnaire to people who are going to be guests on it is what misconceptions there are maybe about what you do and how it's done. And the glaring one that comes out for us with you guys is that there's a perception from a lot of the people who may be the best applicants for you that they need a tech background, and they don't. This is not about your background. It's about the attitude and perspective you bring to the table.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You can't really train for attitude that you bring. So that's a key component. But also the advantage of having somebody that's a hybrid position that comes from another background that knows something else professionally, and then to come into tech and to marry those two together, the skills that you can contribute to the team from having that synthesized background with tech is invaluable.
Ashley, it's radio. You have to talk. You can't just shake your head. So how did that fit for you, understanding that?
I have a bachelor's degree in anthropology. My original plan was to go into library sciences. And as a software tester, I think I use the ideas of diversity and ultimately who are the people looking at this piece of software that we're creating. I have to keep that in mind because it's not just one person. And that's a big part of what I do.
And what is the learning path for you on this whole process from today or from when you started in this to the point at which you are out there in a specific job that's not a percent apprenticeship based position? What does that timeline look like, and what's in the timeline for you?
For me, I'm really hoping to be a developer. I am enrolled in the night classes with Code Slow for the full stack prep, and I'm hoping to get into full stack and eventually become a developer. As a software technician, is given like a real insight of what kind of developers do and the work that they do every day, and I think I can do that. So it's been a great experience.
Okay. You said your Navy background was in IT with some IT factors involved in that too.
It was imagine a call desk or a help desk, but it was on a Navy destroyer. That's what I did.
I was in the Navy, and the concept of having a customer service desk on a destroyer, even for me having been in the Navy and stationed on a ship, just doesn't fit in what I would perceive. But that was also pre-tech days. So that's but that's understandable from that standpoint. Michael, so you have a number of things coming up, and I want to make sure we've got plenty of time to continue talking about this some more. But you have some benchmark deadlines coming up in the next week or so that I think we need to make sure people are aware of if they're interested in this program. Can you tell me about some of those?
So I believe we have another – we had a number of full stack prep boot camps going on. We're already fully booked, 75 people taking – the 8-week course that Ashley alluded to, 5:30 to 7:30 with Code Slow. That's already booked. And we already have, I believe, about 125 people taking an online immersive class with Full Stack. There is another cohort starting with for the online remote. I believe the deadline for that is August 6th. Oh, it's the 15th. Yeah, August 15th. August 15th.
Yeah.
So you can sign up for that. And what we're offering for that is, so that you have some skin in the game, put down the deposit. If you go through and complete the course and take the test for the Full Stack Immersive Boot Camp, we will refund you your money. We want you to have some skin in the game because this is going to get tough. Mm-hmm. So try it out.
You don't want people looking at it as just a sport for the rest of their summer while they go do something else later on.
Yeah, really what Ashley just talked about is how do you get to be a developer and how do we get more diverse people with diverse backgrounds onto developing teams that are making these products that we as consumers who are very diverse are using. We want to make sure that diversity is involved right from the beginning of designing that product. How do you do that? That's been a challenge for the technology industry. I think we need more people with, you know, backgrounds that are, you know, as diverse as Ashley's is, being given that opportunity. And that's really where the apprenticeship program really has its roots in, of how do we get these pipelines to head of household jobs. We started with an entry-level job that Ashley's got, but she can see a career path in front of her where she can see that head of household job that will make living in an expensive area like San Luis Obispo possible.
Okay. So, Dean. Mm-hmm. When you have Ashley as a new apprentice coming into your environment, what do you start with? What did day one look like?
And oh boy.
By the way, since she's sitting here, we can let her tell us what day one was also.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what you had set up, because your expectation and Ashley's expectation were probably both as high and as intense, but may have been drastically different.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure the reveal as to what developers actually do every day was quite surprising. It's not nearly as secretive or clandestine or highly skilled as you would assume. But no, the first day is for a while, actually, it was just getting some exposure to what we do, the systems and to how we operate. So a lot of it, and you know, I repeatedly said this to Ashley when it started, is you don't have to understand this right now. I'm just showing it to you. And after a few times, you'll get used to seeing it, and it will become, you know, you'll start to finally grasp exactly what you're saying. And what I'm referring to is like different systems, the back end code and how it works. You know, you don't have to understand it or grasp it all at once. Just, hey, this is what the code looks like. This is what the servers look like. And so just getting some exposure to that kind of material and then slowly adapting from there to, and now this is how they function together and this is how you're going to operate with them, and then slowly building on that.
Okay. So tell me about day one.
It wasn't as overwhelming as I thought. it was really good. Day one was... I got to see what Dean was doing, and it did feel a little incomprehensible at first, but after day one, it certainly got a lot easier. I think I read in some of your promotional material that coding is a lot like cooking, and I really believe that to be true. Like, for me, it can be uncomfortable. You just got to be uncomfortable and learn a new thing, and that's the approach that I've taken.
Well, my computer skills, as I've said, are very limited. I have worked with some very limited HTML for a website I happen to have for a music hobby I have. Mm-hmm. And my observation is, the good news is I realized very early, is that if I went in and did some coding of something, as long as I didn't publish it, I could play with it forever and look at it and tweak it. And so it's not like if I'm cooking something, I either burn it once and throw it out or get it right the first time. So I'm looking at it from a layman's standpoint, the ability to kind of test and experiment for someone who's coming into this new is probably better than a lot of other career paths.
I think so. I think it is, because we're working with a team. Mm-hmm. And when you're working with a team, like, it's not just your error. It's like, it's everybody's error. So everybody works to catch it. And the fun thing about code, too, is that you don't have an end product. You don't have a cake that you just immediately eat. You're always tinkering with that cake. So there's always room for improvement. And that's really – that takes the edge off, I think, a little bit, because nobody's really demanding perfection. Yes, it should work, but you're always perfecting this work in progress.
Mm-hmm. So when – Dean, with the process that you're working on, you have a product that, for lack of a better way of putting it from a layman's standpoint, shouldn't have to change very much.
Oh, actually it changes – quite a bit.
Well,
yeah,
that's where it's going. Continuously evolving. My hunch is it's changing, because I would say if it works today and it works with, let's say, streaming KCBX to the world, what do you need to do to look at how you're doing that now that may be different than how you want it to be?
So that's actually very interesting, because we find what we want it to be through its interaction with the people that use it the most. So like KCBX, I mean, we get the majority of our developments and our improvements from the actual users suggesting stuff to us. Just to piggyback off what Ashley said, there's one of the great things about, most attractive things about the job and working with a team is every developer is different and they bring something different to it. So you may be looking at code and think, oh man, this is terrific. I wrote something that cannot be improved upon. And then one of the other developers comes and looks over your shoulder and makes a simple statement recommendation, and it improves 10 times over. So everybody brings something to the table that can add to the code, and that makes it a continuously evolving product. And again, actually makes it invaluable for the skills that come from synthesized backgrounds. So you get that diversity. A lot of the times coders will look at something, and I know the rest of my development team sitting back probably listening to this will agree, is that there will be times when we build stuff and it makes sense to us, and we thought we built the best interface or the best feature, and then it's totally unusable by the end user. Or maybe they have some improvement and ask why you did this. So getting that insight.
Okay. So having someone on your team that didn't come from a tech background, or for lack of a better way of putting it, hasn't been doing tech since they were 7 years old, and therefore they've got 20 years of tech experience, and that's all they've done. The outside perspective to the team, which helps in probably anything.
Sure, absolutely.
I've always kind of felt like all the tech people were just together with all the tech people, and and we didn't quite know what they were doing. But
I'm sure that's a scenario in some areas. Yeah, but no, that outside perspective absolutely is advantageous. Gives you something that you may not have caught, just like I was saying, where someone comes over and suggests a piece of code or an alteration to your code that improves it. So having that outside perspective absolutely helps us.
Okay. Michael, I want to get back to some of the things you talked about with as far as how the screening process and what you're really looking for people to be part of this program. Because when I look at the you know, some of your folks sent along some Bureau of Labor Statistics information about this particular type of job market and how it's basically going to grow by 24% over the next 10 years. But one of the things that's in here is it really says that typically the entry-level position for most people working in tech development fields is indeed a degree in technology from a college. It sounds like even though a lot of your people, like Ashley, have a college degree, that's really not a key factor for what you're looking for, or is it?
What we've found in just talking with a number of tech companies, and we've heard this from our colleagues outside of the area even, is there's no degree bias within the tech industry. They understand that if you can get a college degree graduate with a CS degree or a software engineering degree, great. But there's not enough of them to fill the demand.
So there just aren't enough places there for them to get a degree.
Yeah. The pipeline from the university will not fill the demand from business. And so the technology firms have really embraced the idea of it's not what where you went to school, it's what is in your portfolio, what can you do?
Because my assumption going into this was that we were going to have to talk a lot about what you need to do as an undergraduate before you ever get to the level of what you're doing here. And so the answer is for a lot of people looking at this is if that feels like a roadblock, just get out of the way and jump at what you want to do.
Yeah, you shouldn't let school get in the way of your education.
So, some of us did a reasonably good job of not letting it get in the way, but it's that's a story for another time.
Dean, would you agree, though, that there's not that degree bias?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When you go to hire or when you go to bring someone on a team, it's just like in probably every other industry, it's good to have. It's good to have that experience. But the most important aspects of it are usually, can you work with the team? Can you communicate? Can you learn? Can you learn on the job? Just like you were saying earlier on, the skills in this industry, even myself and the rest of the development team at StreamGuys, we are learning skills every 3 to 6 months that just – they don't wipe out the previous skills, but new tech comes out. So if you can adapt, if you can work with a team, if you can contribute, and you can learn new stuff, that's the most important part about looking for a new team member.
Yeah. From my perspective on this, I think that's critical for another reason, and I want to maybe talk about that. And that is for an awful lot of people, especially if you live in California, the ability to make a living or get by while you go to college is tough. There are a lot of people I know that have dropped out of school, out of college, just based upon the fact, I needed to either have a job or go to school, and I couldn't do both. Because I think the perception is if I don't have a college degree, I'm not going to make it anyplace. From my experience, I have seen companies that are basically hiring what I would classify as entry-level salespeople that will not talk to anyone that doesn't have at least a bachelor's degree. Regardless of the degree, if you want to sell insurance, if you want to sell wholesale auto parts, they still are looking for salespeople who have a college degree, and I think for a lot of people that becomes a roadblock. It's good to hear, and I'm glad as part of this program we can talk about the fact that this is really about what you bring to the table other than what piece of paper you bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that college degree probably for the reason why that is that college degree is representative of something, is that you can, complete something that you can communicate effectively. So that's probably why they put it as a limiting factor there. But there's other areas you can look at to demonstrate those type of qualities. And so that's why that college degree isn't the most important thing, is you learn to look at other areas.
Yeah, and Ashley, in your case, you bring a degree to the table, but your degree had nothing to do with – I don't know if it had anything to do with tech from your perspective.
No, not really. I try to include tech in my anthropology degree, but what I'm doing now is completely different than 3D printers, printing out archaeological artifacts, that sort of thing. So I think
I'm going to follow that. Maybe a good program in and of itself sometime. 3D printers with arc. Never. Okay. Go ahead.
But yeah, I don't see it as a negative necessarily that I don't have as much tech experience as I probably expected to going in. Mm-hmm. It's actually it's just a willingness to learn, I really think, is the biggest thing that you need going into this. Just a willingness to learn, a willingness to get a little uncomfortable if it's not like your natural predisposition. Because I don't think it is mine in a lot of ways. Anthropology is a pretty big divergence. But I love doing it, and I love the challenge of it, and I'm really happy that I've had this opportunity.
Okay. For those of you who may just be joining the program right now, we are talking to people from SLO Partners, which is a program through the County Office of Education, and they're putting on some programs that we want to call Ticket to Tech, which in this case is an apprenticeship program we want to talk about some more. And Ashley's with us. She's an apprentice at one of the companies that is involved in this. That's StreamGuys. And Dean is the representative from StreamGuys and is senior developer there. And Michael, who's the executive director of SLO Partners. So how long is the apprentice process? Is it when you get to this point at which Ashley is at, how long does that process take? Or does it go on until...
So that's what's
answer this one. Yeah.
So that's what's nice. So we started with the 8-week pre-apprenticeship program, mm-hmm. and then Ashley was very successful with that and was invited into the 6-week training for software testing, where she learned all the procedures and protocols for how do you test the developer's code to see whether something else broke down the line, and then how do you go and tell that developer team that they got something broken? That's where her strong customer service background comes in. And now she's been on, she's at like month 6, month 8?
I think 7.
Yeah.
I think 7.
7 months of on-the-job training. And now she's started the process of going into the next stage of a second apprenticeship, which will be towards, hopefully, towards software developer. So really what we were most intrigued with, and this was the innovative part of the grant, was how do you get people to that full-stack developer? That's the elusive goal that a lot of people are trying to go through. And how do you do it outside of a 4-year degree? I think that the software testing path into the software developer path is starting to prove to have some worth, where we can do something in 2 years, which might take a university 4 years, but you're going to have 2 years of solid experience with a company working on a developer team that really makes you stand out from other people. Because even someone who graduates from Cal Poly with a computer science degree, maybe they did an internship for a summer, but they don't have that range of experience, really, unless they had a lot of, you know, jobs or portfolio on their own.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that we always look for, is real-world experience, you know, something that you did. So just even if you come out of school with a CS degree, we'd be looking for internships. You know, maybe you worked on a project that you did for free for someone, but that real world experience working on something that's actually a product or something that's going to be put out there in the market is another invaluable aspect of skills that you can learn outside of the traditional college degree.
I don't want to turn this into putting you on the spot, Dean, or Ashley on the spot. I'm wondering, do you either of you look at this from a standpoint of gee, you have an apprenticeship with your firm now, and what you're looking at is the potential for that apprentice to evolve into a specific job with you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even before, you know, as Ashley joined the team, we're already looking at, you know, we were already looking at that track as to mm-hmm. where she goes from, you know, after the joining and then, you know, after the software testing, if you like it, you know, because you're never really sure if, you know, you might get behind and see the code and go, nope, you know what, that's no, not for me. But so, you know, just dynamically adapting to how, you know, you're enjoying the job and then how progressing and the needs of the company. But yeah, absolutely. We're very much about that.
So that's a possibility. And the flip side actually may be, because you talked about wanting to go into to library science, is maybe at some point you might decide to look at a firm that specializes in library and technology cataloging, as opposed to streaming audio.
God, I'd love to go back to library science in a way. Yeah.
Okay.
But
Dean, I'm sorry if I just pushed
her. Put the idea in the head.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm approaching this as I am here to learn, and all these opportunities that are given to me by Ticket to Tech or StreamGuys, this really is for me a progression, a way to plan out my future, and each is a little stepping block to get where I want to go. But I think I would really like to stay with Stream Guys, though. It would be amazing if I could stay with Stream Guys. They have a great culture where people can move up the ranks, and I'm really glad that that happens. And just they have a culture of people staying for a while and making a career out of something. That's really attractive to me. So I have a lot of options now.
Yeah, just for example there, I've been with the company for 8.5 years now, and I started as a frontline tech support for them and have moved up over the time to be a senior developer. So it is a culture of promoting from within and promoting people to succeed from within as well.
Yeah. Michael, what other firms in the area are you working with? I know in some of the notes I saw that that you have some people who are apprenticing with Rabobank, I believe, down in Santa Maria.
Yeah, we have 18 local companies that we're working with. Okay. Rabobank has a their regional tech center is in Santa Maria, and we have a software tester down there and an IT specialist. We have a software tester at Amazon locally. We have a number of startups. We have White Fox Defense. We have a software tester with them. We have two school districts that we have network technicians working at, Orcutt School District and San Luis Coastal School District. Let's see. We have a advanced manufacturing company that has a software tester. He didn't even know what a software tester was, but manufacturing has increasingly become so automated that when we described what the skills were and what, you know, what we were creating, and then we introduced them to our clients, he said, yeah, I want one of those. So trust automation.
So they were using software, or they were developing software, but they did not have a testing program for it.
So trust automation does a lot of high-end advanced manufacturing. And so within their whatever they're fabricating or making, there could be a number of different nodes within the assembly line. And each of those are controlled by different software. And so a software tester would make sure that the programming is correct and it's not affecting something down the line. In the same respect, we have three software testers at IQMS in the North County. And that is a company that makes software for manufacturing companies. So it's a very, really, I've learned a lot about just these small entrepreneurial companies that are here in San Luis Obispo, that this type of a program can really make or break them of whether they can expand and move forward. And as an educator, just understanding that and helping young people and parents understand that there's local opportunity here is really important. I've been an educator, a teacher for 20 years. I've taught history, library science, social studies, computer science, and digital media. And really, having this kind of information to help influence programs at the high school and the community college, that's part of where this apprenticeship sticks out, that this can be just like a four-year degree. An apprenticeship should be seen as a similar opportunity for anyone graduating from high school.
I'm gonna have you maybe go talk. My wife teaches middle school math. That's not a secret. Most of our listeners know I've referred to that before. She has students to this day that will say, why do I need to learn this? Because I'm never going to use math again. And I would say a good portion of what you do is math driven. And
there's an algorithm somewhere that code,
yeah. And it's code. And you may not need to know the algorithm to get it to work, but somebody had to write it, and that's a key factor from that standpoint. Thank you. If people want to get more information about this program, either because they want to, as manufacturers or people in already technology companies, or just the community support it, and or if they're interested in being able to possibly be a student and apprentice with the program, how do they find you?
We're really easy to find, slowpartners.org. And just go to slowpartners.org. We got an easy-to-read contact page. We've got FAQs right there. We respond to all emails within 24 hours. Heck, it worked for Dean. He just called me right there on the email.
That's good.
And we were there.
Sometimes our listeners forget that if you can't remember a web address, it's amazing what you can Google or Bing or whatever you want to use to find it. It'll if it doesn't show up, even if – I'm the worst speller in the world. Even if I type it wrong, it still shows up. So that's helpful.
If you call the County Office of Education, they know who I am.
good way to put it. You do have some scholarship opportunities coming up, I guess, because there are people who have have mentioned their concern about the financial side of this for some folks.
Yeah. So the scholarships are for the actual full stack boot camp, and we have two full scholarships for recent grads and two half scholarships for recent high school grads. And we also have one full-ride scholarship for women applicants and two half-time scholarships for women applicants.
Okay. Sounds like a great program. As most of our listeners know, I try and get out of the way for a little while to make sure that you folks get a chance to talk about whatever part of this I may have missed. And Dean, I'm going to start with you. So you've got a couple of minutes to pretty much make sure that we have a better understanding of why this works for you and why you're part of it.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think you've done a great job covering it so far. But, just to wrap up there, to summarize, it's great to have not only the support from the community, but also the pipeline that comes directly from working with those people in the community too. Get applicants that have already been screened, have already been trained, and are already looking forward to being part of the tech industry here. That's an absolutely invaluable resource, and I can't say enough about, I can't say enough about how much it's helped us as we've come down here and look to expand.
Real quick question. How many locations are StreamGuys in?
Two. This is just our second one. So I got one office up in Bayside, California, which is right on the outside of Arcata, and then one here. Although we do have some people distributed throughout the state of California.
How many NPR stations do you stream? Round figures.
Round figure. I'm not sure, but pretty close to them all, I'd say. I'm not completely sure on that one. Yeah.
Well, just for clarification, you're not here because of your connection to streaming our programming.
We came here directly for you. Yeah, that's why.
No. Oh, I don't. I'm not going to believe that for a second. That's okay from that standpoint. Okay, Ashley, tell us about this program from your perspective and what fits for you. And I'll just get out of the way for a couple of minutes.
Okay. Well, I really love that this program has been so supportive of women in tech, particularly. I think only 19% of women make up the tech workforce. And I think it's just that's a shame, and there should be more. I think we have a lot of great role models that are women in tech that we don't really hear a lot about, like Grace Hopper and Dorothy Vaughn and Margaret Hamilton, and my absolute fave, Hedy Lamarr, which was like this glamorous actress in the 1940s who's now considered the mother of modern Wi-Fi. And I think just more women should get into tech.
I need a little more explanation of that. Hedy Lamarr is the mother of Wi-Fi.
Yes, sir.
You have a little bit of time. Can you give me a
Absolutely.
Quick explanation?
Okay. So Hedy Lamarr was originally from Austria. She was Jewish. During the war, she immigrated to the U.S., became a movie star, but she really wanted to contribute to the war effort. So she and a piano composer tinkered around trying to figure out how to switch frequencies, radio hop, so they could actually send missiles without it getting hacked and diverted. And they figured it out. They used this piano. What is it? When they're automatic pianos? They
have player piano.
Player pianos. Piano, yeah. They used that to achieve radio hopping. And they didn't use it during the war, but the Navy ended up using it later.
Fascinating. Thank you for sharing that with us. That is absolutely fascinating.
You're welcome.
Okay. Michael, you're the guy that's the point man for this, because you're the one that really knows how this works and why it does. And so you're on. Give me a couple of minutes to explain
Ashley,
what we need to know. Yeah,
Ashley really gave you a couple of other stories on why it's so important that we bring in such diverse talent and diverse viewpoints into tech, because that's how you really are able to solve problems. You can always say, oh, we're looking for creative problem solvers. But this is the type of program with apprenticeship where an apprentice is given the opportunity to gain experience. a business is given an opportunity to give that experience and embrace that diversity on their team. And it's a win-win situation for both, where each side gets a return on investment. The apprentice gets that experience that can go towards any job, but most likely it builds loyalty with the business that they're working with. And the business really sees that they've got a career and talent and a pipeline in front of them that they can really start preparing for their business. That's why we're offering these scholarships. We're looking for recent high school graduates, as well as women applicants to tech. Apply by August 15th. Go visit the SLO Partners website. Lots of FAQs there. Contact us if you need us.
It's a great program. I think the fact that our County Office of Education is doing this is speaks well for the progressive nature of San Luis County, because I guess I can say this and I won't make you responsible for it. I'm wondering why there's not programs like this going on with kids out of high school and kids in high school in San Jose, because I think a lot of the large tech companies in the larger cities, in my opinion, have kind of turned their back on whether or not they want to work with some young people
to
do this.
So there are other programs like this throughout the state. We actually have a larger number of employers working with us than other areas. I'll thank our superintendent-elect, Dr. Brescia, for embracing this entrepreneurial spirit, as well as my own entrepreneurial spirit. But I think the difference what we've found here in San Luis Obispo is we've got the employer partners. A lot of our the other grants that won up in the Bay Area, they're doing a good job of training, but maybe it's just the sharky nature of the Silicon Valley that the employer partners are not quite stepping up to the table. But here locally, I think our local employers are really embracing this idea of what apprenticeship means for future careers locally grown.
Great. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. This is Central Coast Voices. We thank you for joining us today. I want to remind you that this is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, along with KCBX Public Radio. Chris Kington Barker and I alternate weeks. She'll be with you next week. She has a fascinating program. We don't have a list of her guests verified yet, but she's going to talk about the implications of people perceiving that fake news is fake news and how it affects both our society and how it taints information we're working with, and how effective that perception is or is not for our ability to really hear the truth. That'll be her program next week. Action for Healthy Communities is underwritten by a grant from Joan Gellert Sargent, and we appreciate her support. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 805-543-2323. Thank you today to my guests, Ashley Dean and Michael, for a wonderful program. Coming up next is This American Life. This has been a wonderful opportunity to share with you some real technology innovations going on in our county, and remind you that that's basically a regional-wide situation, because this program is working with companies in the Santa Maria area also, and working with companies that have a national presence. Thanks very much for being with Central Coast Voices today.